This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings! It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by...
Liv Kennedy. Why did I not say... Hi, I'm Liv Kennedy.
You didn't say hi.
I didn't say hi. That's like the first
time... You just know what you did it! You did
you
it perfectly, Liv. Why did you
Liv
stop yourself?
Kennedy.
Oh, I thought that was like my official... Oh, it's been two years.
You did
all
it.
Right, Liv Kennedy.
but you didn't say, but everybody calls me Liv. You said everybody... Olivia Kennedy.
No.
Do people call you Olivia now?
Well, no. No.
Well, no.
Is
oh,
there
God.
A new nickname?
This is no. Well, that would be the full name. My full name is Olivia, but like I go by. Oh my
no,
God!
No, I meant like alternate.
Who else?
Call you L or V or something?
Questioner. My questioner. Who are you? And what are you doing?
Who are you?
If only I knew.
Dear Lord.
Hello, everybody. I'm Jeremy Cobb, but Neelzebub calls me Jeremy Cobb with the Wind, which I think is a Gone with the Wind.
Gone with the
reference.
Wind.
Oh, Gone with the Wind. Okay, yeah. That's nice.
Yeah.
Okay, very nice.
All right. Fancy.
Well, I'm very, very excited to welcome a guest onto Three Black Halflings, which I personally have been waiting to have on for such a long time.
Wow. Oh.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
We have someone, absolutely incredible person, from Ox Venture and Outside Xbox. It's the one and only Jade Douglas. Welcome
hey!
To Three Black Halflings.
Hey, hey. Wow, what an intro.
Oh my God.
Thanks for having me, folks.
Wrong dungeon and the wrong dragons.
Full Prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no!
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now.
So excited to have you here. I feel like this has been such a long time coming.
Mm-hmm.
Huge fans, obviously, of Ox Venture. Myself and Liv have been on Ox Venture, and I haven't even seen you there, which we were just saying off air. It feels very strange to have not crossed paths with you. Well, we did cross paths very briefly at the D&D premiere.
Yeah.
The streams
on a red carpet, no less. So I feel like that's a fine way to just miss each other.
Yeah. Maybe we should make a habit of it.
Yeah.
We'll only ever meet on a red carpet.
Wearing like evening wear on a red carpet. Yeah.
Only exclusive events.
Yeah, that sounds perfect to me.
I don't want to meet you unless I'm wearing a cape again.
Oh, the cape. Oh man, I did see the cape.
That was
sick. Yeah. We were all dressed
that was
so
fun.
Differently.
Jeremy, right before that, Jeremy was like, "Shall I wear the cape?" We were like, "Yeah, man." There's one movie premiere where you're going to get away with wearing a cape. It's this one. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm so sure I was like, if you want to, you can do whatever you want, bud. Like,
that cape was great. I'll have you know. For those of you who haven't seen the pictures, the cape was great and it fit right in.
Absolutely.
The cape was perfect. Zero notes. Well, Jane, thank you so much for being here. Very, very excited to have you. We will be talking more about the amazing show that is Ox Venture a little bit later, but first we have to obviously start what we always start with all of our guests, which is your nerdy origin story. What was like the first thing that got a young Jane Douglas into nerdy stuff, into games, into D&D, all that kind of thing?
Okay, well, like you said, I started out on YouTube with Outside Xbox, which is a video game channel. So I suppose if we're broadening nerdy out to, you know, video games and tabletop games.
Everything, we include everything.
Absolutely, it was playing video games with my sister. It was like our series of home family consoles in the living room, you know, those things.
What were the early games?
Early thing. I remember getting a PlayStation 1 that was ostensibly my dad's Father's Day gift. And I talked my mom into buying it because I'm like, Dad's going to love Tomb Raider. I tell you, he's going to be all about. And I had no idea whether my dad would enjoy that, but I knew I wanted a PlayStation. So
he's been telling me exclusively and not you that he really wants one. but like I just he's been too embarrassed.
And if you ask him, he'll deny it. But he really wants to play Resident Evil 2 on the PlayStation. So let's go
with me.
I like that. I think that's a strong way to manipulate a situation for your, you know, for your favor. Because I think ultimately your dad probably didn't mind having a PlayStation in the house, right?
Honestly,
I should imagine.
Yeah, my dad is quite nerdy. Like he's like into computers and radios and electronics, and so it tracked. And you know, and he had like much older consoles. Like he had a Commodore 64 and et cetera. So it tracked that he would also enjoy, you know, the later the later iteration that is the Sony PlayStation. So
I love the fact that my I've recently had a child and my son is absolutely going to get away with that because there's no doubt that I do want the latest console, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, that just 100%. You can absolutely use me as an excuse whenever you like.
Unless your personality completely changes on its head and you're just like, oh, I hate games. That would be bad.
I hate video games
for us specifically as well.
What if your kid like rebels and rejects all nerd culture? What if?
Yeah. What if your kid is like a classic 80s jock bully? Yeah.
That's, I mean, thing is, you say that like I'm not hugely into football.
No, but you're not like a hooligan though, are you?
You win always. Yeah.
Listen, mm-hmm. my son is the most precious, most darling thing in the world. If my son wants to be a little hooligan, I'll ride and die with him.
You'll get into the fist fights with the other dads.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
My 6-year old said, deck to be that a dad's podcast host.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. It'd be fine. It'll sound exactly the same.
I do want to say, though, I would be surprised if you were not already angling to get those video game systems. Like, I'd be surprised if River had to say, could you please get me? You know what I mean?
Sure, I probably would already have them is the point that you're making.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that my son asking my wife would probably be a much easier conversation than if I was to ask my wife.
True,
It makes a lot more sense, you know what I mean, from my son. So actually, if anything, I'm kind of reverse engineering the situation. I'm doing the sort of opposite of what Jane did.
Yeah.
Or I'm trying to get my kid to ask for it.
Yeah. Tell your mother we need a VR headset immediately.
Yes, it's really important, actually, for your development. Actually, it's a part of your school. School's going to be setting some classes on the VR headset, so.
But Dad, it hits my eyes. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry.
Give it 10 years, you'll be able to get new eyes. I've seen the technology is moving.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome, and I think it's always really fun when like a genuine love or a genuine passion from so young ends up becoming something that you can, you know, pursue. Or you know, at what point then did sort of playing games with your sister and trying to con your mother into buying you games consoles turn into, you know, outside Xbox and sort of playing games and
professional gaming,
reviewing and all of that kind of stuff, professional gaming. Yeah.
Sure. Well, I mean, I carried on playing games and they were just always there. I don't think I set out. Well, I know I didn't set out with the early intention of getting into video games. I actually studied physics. I did science at university and I wanted to get into science communication. I thought I'd be a science journalist, a science writer of some sort. Good. But I did a lot of student journalism at the same time. And I think, some like video game stuff for the student newspaper. So it kind of found its way eventually towards games journalism. Mm. And it wasn't video at first. And I worked for Microsoft for a little while and GameSpot for a little while. And then with Mike and Andy, my co-founders over at Outside Xbox, we started a YouTube channel. And it's been Outside Xbox and then Oxventure ever since.
Yeah. Wow, that's really, really cool. We're actually going to pivot now. We're going to leave everything nerdy behind and just talk about physics.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool.
That is fascinating.
Physics, not a nerdy subject at all.
And huge props.
Was there a particular area of physics that you specialized in, out of curiosity?
Oh, boy. I did a final year project and all I can remember about it is the title. The science has gone from my brain, but it was like crystal superstructures in borate glasses. And we did a load of like nuclear magnetic resonance imaging and you know, proper hardcore lab stuff, which was
okay. So I just want to clarify something. You said all the science has left your brain, yet you said a string of words which I've never heard before in my life.
Yeah, what kind of imaging again? What kind?
Nuclear magagnetic resonance. It's the sort of the same thing you get in an MRI scanner. So if you know that, like from a medical context. So, you know, basically, powerful magnets, and then we'd make glasses, glass like substances, and like big science kilns. Mm-hmm. I have a very strong memory of like opening these kilns, and like I wasn't wearing like the safety apron, and my clothes started like smoking because they're so hot. So
you almost got Dr. Manhattan.
I almost got Dr. Manhattan. I could have.
Oh, could you imagine
Dr.
how
Manhattan.
Different your life would be if you got Dr. Manhattan's powers?
I could have been, whoa. Yeah.
But like the glass version?
Yeah, Madame Glass or something. Yeah.
Oh, that's actually
that
sick.
Pretty cool.
Madame Glass. Madame Glass is actually really cool name.
That's my sliding doors moment when I could have been a superhero.
The crystal queen.
The glass slipper, but that kind of implies you'd be clumsy, so maybe not.
That's super exciting.
I'm just curious then. Yeah. What, this is slight jumping back, what was or were some of your favorite games growing up? And then how do those compare to like the way that, I guess, how has your love, the second part of this is how has your love for video games been affected by like actually engaging with them as part of your job? Or has it been affected by that at all?
Yeah, I think the luxury you have when you don't work in games is to like hyper fixate on like, this is my game and I don't care to play anything else. And I'm just going to obsess on this one thing. And that also works very nicely when you're a kid and you know, you're not buying games, you know, every single week. So you have the one game that you're into. And so there's a series of those games. I remember, I think one of my earliest, most beloved PC games was like the original Max Payne. And I'm not even a shooter fan, but it's so like filmic and cinematic and vibey and comic booky and kind of self-consciously noir, gritty, and it's got just immaculate vibes and that really hooked me when I was just little, you know, probably too little, but so there's a series of like somewhat disparate games that just happen to fall into my lap, I suppose, as I grew up as a little gamer. Mm-hmm. And then like it's not always obvious what I'm gonna like, I suppose, like fixate on. There was a Sims period. I guess it must have been like Sims 1 or Sims 2, obviously. Yeah, you've got to have your Sims period. And then I suppose if anything, I was playing less games at university because I didn't actually have like a console. You know, in like student halls. Mm. So,
and you're not really a PC gamer.
Perhaps less of it then. Well, yeah, there was PC games. I remember a bunch of like, oh man, that was it. I had a really rubbish PC as a student, like a really terrible PC, because it wasn't like the family PC, which was like moderately powerful, but it was like time for Jane to go to university. You can have the cheapest PC that we can find for you. And it was absolutely fine for like doing student work. So my parents played a blinder.
Word was like getting the fan going.
Yeah. That's 100%. So like, you know, you could download the game, but could you play it? So, yeah.
But that's
the luxury you have when you have no professional obligation to kind of be more broadly aware of like what's going on in the games landscape. And I think now it behooves me to, you know, you're trying to sample, you know, kind of a range of everything that's out there.
Yeah.
So it's not so much you can have like a hyper fixation on like a specific genre and I'm only going to play these games. Mm-hmm. I try to like broaden it out and play a bunch of things, which does mean that sometimes you get to engage like a little bit more shallowly rather than like go deep on a specific game.
Probably also means that you have to stick with a couple of games and you're like, I don't like this. But I need to like play it for long enough to like get an opinion of it. You know what I mean? Like I can't just be like, I played 2 minutes and said no. You know what I mean?
You're probably not wrong.
Dig a little deeper.
Yeah.
You know?
You got to give everything a chance.
Capture footage as well.
Oh, 100%. Liv is 100% right. That sometimes I will be playing something for far too long because of the way we make video is like, you know, okay, we're going to have to capture something that's a few hours in from a save file that someone has. and it's not a game I would choose to be playing, but here I am at, you know, midnight trying to get to this one bit. Mm-hmm. And then we feature it in a video for like 20 seconds and you're like, worth it? Totally worth it. Yeah.
Totally worth it. Totally worth it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I definitely feel you not being able to obsess over games, because I feel like that's like generally the way I interact with games. Like, I feel like it's odd for me to imagine a world in which I didn't like obsess over one game and one game only and then move on. Like, I feel like I'd find it really hard to like flip between them.
I mean, all of this said, I have played like 100+ hours of Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah, nice.
Yes. And I have not finished it yet. I'm kind of like just making sure I pick up every single breadcrumb in the city, you know, in the final act of the game.
Oh yeah.
So
I feel like act 3 though is as long as the first two acts combined.
Oh yeah. 100%. You turn up and you're like, "Oh, it's a city. This is fine. Yeah. I'm going to wrap this game up by the end of the weekend and here I am, you know, like 3 months later."
And you're like, "Oh no, there's several games worth of game in this city."
I think at this point I'm a little bit scared of finishing it. Like, it's become like
a staple. Makes
sense. I was like that with Skyrim. Like, it became almost like this MMO, like an MMO without the other people that you would just dip into and then kind of like come away from and never quite finish it. So and then of course
there's always that fear that you'll finish a game and then you won't be able to go back. Like, I had the same thing with Fallout 3. I remember not wanting to finish it because I didn't know whether I'd be able to like go back, and I was like, well, people in the wasteland still need me. And what happens if I like, what happens if I complete the game?
Obligation to these people.
And then I'm unable to clear out this underground ghoul nest. You know what I mean? Like, the people are going to die because I completed the game.
Yeah. Oh, and then obviously right now we've got Dragon's Dogma 2.
Woo.
With your character in it, Jasper.
Yeah, my boy Sven. It's very fun, actually, seeing... I, like, Googled Sven, Dragon's Dogma 2, and it was just so many articles being like, this kid hasn't paid me my money back. And I was like, that's kind of funny.
That's my boy.
Shout out, well, because my friend... has been the creator of the game Paradox Perfect has been playing Dragon's Dogma 2 and did a stream in which I think he partnered up with your character. Let me see if I can find what he said. The whole stream was Jasper Quest. It was a Jasper Quest stream.
So I didn't know anything about this.
He said he abducted you and was caught by the guards, so he hurled you at the guards in order to escape. And then he also threw you off a cliff later on and jumped to his death with you.
Okay.
Absolutely beautiful. I'll take it.
It's
incredible.
What's the film with the two ladies who go over the edge of the cliff? That's what I'm imagining right now.
Thelma and Louise.
Thelma and Louise, yeah. It's very Thelma
and
Louise.
Jasper. Yeah. But he also said, I'm going to toss that boy in reference to the character. And so he got canceled by chat. Yeah. I think it was just very unfortunate.
Thank you,
phrasing.
Chat. Well, I want to thank
chat. Looking out for you.
I want to actually make a quick admission here, just because I feel like I've been sitting on this for a while, and I feel like it's time for me to finally come clean. My Baldur's Gate 3 is still sat at a meager 4.5 hours of gameplay. And it's really quite upsetting because I love that game. I really do. I very nearly played more at a Baldur's Gate 3 press event than I have of the actual game. And it's mostly just because I want to sit down and be able to actually play it. And whenever I have any brain power at the moment, I'm working or parenting. All I do the rest of the time is play like plug and play games.
Yeah.
So Helldivers 2 is my entire shit at the moment. Yeah. Because it's just like, hell yeah. I jump into a little pod and I jump out and I kill some bugs. Mm-hmm. Let's go.
Perfect.
That's easy. I don't have to think about spells or whether I'm hitting on Asteria in the right way. You know what I mean? It's like, I have none of these complications.
The right way is showing zero interest. Then he's interested. So,
Be mean to people and he'll jump in. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, well, that's good to know because I'm excited.
There is literally a quest to save some slaves and he gives you disapproval if you agree to help.
Oh my god.
That tracks.
Okay, at that point,
it's because the slaves are gnomes and Astarion is openly racist against anyone short. Like, he does not consider them people. Like, literally, sure. There is a scene in the game where he talks about, like, subhuman creatures. And nice. Among them, he lists, I believe, either halflings or gnomes, depending on what kind of character you're playing. And also kobolds. Yeah.
Please.
Oh, my God.
He's also the only character that you can openly call racist. And he doubles down. Like, if you say, wow, you can't say that. You can literally call him the word racist. And he's like, yeah. I am. What of it?
Oh my god.
I went into BG3 with every intention of like seducing Astarion. I just couldn't do it. I'm so
sure, couldn't bring yourself.
I'm so programmed to like choose the nice guy option in every dialogue, you know, every dialogue tree. Yeah. And like every time there was an option there, and I was like, I know that's what Astarion wants to hear. I can't do it. And that's how you end up with Gale. So.
I knew it was going to be Gale. So sorry. I hear his romance is really good, though. I haven't really done it, but he seems like he'd be really good to romance.
I hear his romance is really good. Like, that's a wild thing. Like,
I just can't get Mitra off my mind, you know? I'm like, you're thinking about her again, aren't you? You know, like, can't be doing it.
Absolutely incredible. Well, I guess if we could pivot slightly, because I guess, you know, we're talking about Baldur's Gate, so we might as well talk a little bit about D&D and, of course, the incredible show Oxventure. I just wanted to talk a little bit about how that first came about. I think we've spoken to a couple of guys about sort of the starting of Oxventure, but obviously would love to hear it from your perspective about sort of how it kind of, what was the genesis for it, and then what the ride has been like. Because I feel like one of the very consistent things that we've had on this show, which I love so dearly, is that nearly every single person who's like now in a very big D&D show is like, it's wild that we got hit. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a, like, everyone's like, we started this little show, we thought it'd be kind of fun, and then 6 years later, I'm in New York, and there's thousands of people screaming my name. You know what I mean? So I'd just love to hear a little bit about, like, yeah, what the genesis of that was, and then how it's been being a part of the sort of Oxventure sort of bubble for the last how many years.
Sure. So it was coming up to 6 years ago, I believe, that we hit 2 million subscribers on Outside Xbox, so on the video games YouTube channel.
Huge congrats.
Thank you.
That's wild. Yeah.
And to celebrate, we decided to play Dungeons & Dragons. I think a bunch of members of the community had said, like, you know, this would be a fun thing to do to celebrate. Like, we'd never done any tabletop stuff for YouTube. And so we went to a pub, a gaming pub basement, and you can still see this video online, obviously, on the Oxventure YouTube channel, which obviously didn't exist at the time. Yeah. And so we're in this kind of, arcadey sort of basement. Mike's not there. Mike couldn't be there at the time. Mm-hmm. I can't remember why. I'm sure Mike would know. But it's, you know, it's like everyone's there except Mike. And Johnny Chiodini, our dungeon master, had for, you know, days, weeks beforehand been like talking us through character creation and, you know, kind of setting us up with our, you know, our very first characters and helping us, you know, roll stats and things like that. And yeah, so we shot it. It was the height of summer, I remember, because it was swelteringly hot. I think I'm wearing like, I don't know, something like a little summery jumpsuit or something in the video, because we weren't wearing costumes at that point. Okay. That was a rod we made for our own back later. So the first time we did it, I'm sure we're just...
Another running theme with all D&D shows. Yes. There's always a point where someone's like, man, I can't, why did we start doing this particular thing?
100%. You're going to commit to something that years down the line, you're like, oh boy, the time I could have saved, the cost I could have saved. But that said, I think Ellen brought, so it was me, Andy, Johnny, Ellen and Luke. Ellen did bring a cloak. So I feel like Ellen knew what was up even in those early days. Mm-hmm. And it was, weirdly, it was like a cloak that her mum owned. So it was like a family cloak, like a big, long cloak. Kind of, you know, that. Heavy Laura. I think it's Laura Ashley. Did you know Laura Ashley made cloaks?
No, I did
not. So like a vintage heavy cloak.
Okay, Jane, why have you said that? Liv, calm down. Don't, don't get off the website now. Get off the website.
I was literally about to. Stop getting on my head. Get on my head.
She's making a break for it. Don't go, Liv. Go, go, go. Get up on the interview, please.
But yeah, that Ellen had the right idea, obviously.
Ellen knew what was up, for sure.
So I think you can see that in the video that Ellen is the only one wearing like a costume element. And and that was our first game. And it was heavily edited, because if it wasn't, it would just be us asking Johnny's permission to, you know, like, is this okay? Can I do, you know, is this right? But, you know, and this was long before we started like taking liberties with the rules and you know, while we were trying to get everything perfect. And as a result, I'm sure we shot sort of three times as much as we could actually use, you know. And that strong memories of that very early D&D thing of spending way too long like negotiating several plans. I don't know if that's your experience. Plans and kind of weighing them up, the pros and the cons, and negotiating and someone else has got an idea.
They never happen, which is
such an unfulfilling, you know, from an audience point of view, such like an unfulfilling experience to be like, but what about the plan where you dress up as the thing and the dude? I wanted to see that one. So I think that's something that's developed over time. Like sometimes you just got a first thought, best thought, you know.
And also that's like a new DM thing as well, because I think now experienced DMs, like, I'm setting a timer on my side of the screen. If this takes longer than 10 minutes, you're getting jumped. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, the big bad that you're planning to fight is going to rock up at your house because you took too long, like, talking about it. You know what I mean?
I think Johnny's very generous as a DM then and now, but also I believe they had DM'd before, but like not loads, not for D&D, that is. I mean, you know, other games for sure, but I think D&D less. So, you know, we all grew together. We all started.
And also it's such a, you know, I can't even count the amount of times we must have said on this show. It's so different playing and DMing, you know, on for like an audience versus just for, you know, just at your home game. Like, it's a completely different vibe. In your home game, there's nothing wrong with picking the bones out of, you know, a plan and spending half of a session doing that, because it's really important and you want to make sure your characters survive and you know what I mean, like all of that stuff. Like, it makes perfect sense. But like, when you're playing, it's absolutely like you said, when you're playing a game and there's an audience sat there waiting expectantly for something
to
happen,
a video, and your editor's going to be mad at you if you just keep keep jumping in and jumping out, like, oh, I'm gonna take five outlet, and then you're gonna be mad.
Absolutely. That's one of the big things I think, just in terms of like, because I ran a game in person recently with my home game. It was the first time since 2019, before I went on tour with a show at the end of 2019. It is the first time that we got to run this game in person.
But you've been playing online?
Yeah, we've been playing online for the past 4 years. And it got so heated. People were like screaming at each other. I'll have to tell this as a tale from the table sometime, because it was wild. Some choices were made. But the amount of time that I could just sit there and let them do whatever and not be like, we have to keep things moving, is so different than compared to a streamed game where it's like, okay, maybe Critical Role, they can do that. But I think for most shows, the vibe is like, we got to keep things moving, keep it pumping, keep it going along, because most people don't want to sit there and listen to like five or six people just talk about plans that may or may not ever happen for like hours on end.
Yeah.
I had like a full Whiplash moment, and I say this with all the love in the world for the Critical Role guys. Liv, you were also there. Went to see the Critical Role show at Wembley.
Yeah.
And there was like a moment where it was like, sick. We've got the plan. We've got everyone back together. We know what we're going to do. We know where we're going. And then like the whole group was like, sick, we're going to go back to the tower and get a rest. And I was so in like stream D&D mode that I was like, what? Like, what? What do you mean? You're going to just leave and not do the plan now? You're going to have like a whole extra half an hour scene? What? This is crazy.
This is what I paid for.
And then I was like, oh yeah, this is like a home game. This is exactly what you would do in a home game. You'd make the optimal choice. You know, especially because your DM is Matt and is probably going to try and kill you.
Yeah, so, for sure. Yeah, sense. You need to get that definitely Heroes Feast sense. In for sure.
But that did make me laugh. But
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the new series that you have, which is D&D But. I saw the one recently with D&D But Kobolds, Everyone's Kobolds, which was extremely fun. What was the original idea for this? What was anyone's particular idea? And also, is there any ideas that didn't make it? Was there any truly kind of crazy ideas that were we can't do that?
See
if there's any that didn't make the cut. I'm just intrigued.
It's very generous of you to assume that we have more ideas than we use, and we're not just laying the rail track with ideas as the train comes barreling down.
Barreling
and
down,
just making everything we can think of. So D&D But, one of the reasons, the first one that comes to mind was that Oxventure is 6 years old now, or nearly. And, we love our characters and, there's a lot of lore now and there's a lot of history and we try not to, get too heavy and too kind of inaccessible for people who don't know that lore. But inevitably, it's a 6-year long story. And so we're aware that it's not the easiest way to kind of get involved if you've never seen us before, or if you do like to watch us and you've got a friend that you want to recommend us to, and what are you going to say? Go start watching this video from 6 years ago and I'll see you in a few months, when you've caught up. So we wanted some stuff that people could enjoy right off the bat, persuade them to give us a chance with the longer forms, not longer form stuff, but the longer term stuff. So we wanted something that was a little bit more accessible. And also we wanted to, experiment. And I think we've also been experimenting over, recent years with other tabletop role-playing games, of course. But, coming back to D&D feels like it's such a good onboarding kind of game for people who aren't necessarily TTRPG fans, and for us that's a lot of video game fans, and D&D is such a good gateway drug, especially if you're coming from video games, because it has such it owes so much, video games owe so much to the D&D tradition.
If you've played a video game RPG, you probably know some of the rules to D&D already,
exactly. Everything go ahead.
No, please, Carol.
There's, the mechanical heritage of D&D, and also just the tropes of Oxford, the kind of the world that Johnny has created, that we've created together, is very generic, but generic in the best way, in a positive way, generic fantasy. And everyone has a shared set of touchstones for that Tolkien-esque Western fantasy, which makes it very tropey, which is fun and funny, but also just easy to get a foothold on, because you don't need to read the Bible of Oxventure to kind of understand the setting, because it's you've seen Lord of the Rings, generic Europeanish fantasy sort of stuff. So anyway, that's Oxventure. D&D, exactly, accessible. And then D&D But was a way to kind of experiment with some fun ideas, do one shots, but one shots in D&D, especially with ideas that kind of suggest the characters for you, so that we're not going away and creating an entire new party of characters. They're all kobolds, or they've all got amnesia. Was our most recent?
Oh, the scratch card.
I haven't watched that one yet, but I'm so intrigued by it. I was kind of jealous, honestly. I was like, damn, I want to do that. That sounds
you should do it.
Genuinely so fun. I'd happily do that just as a home game for us three. I feel like we'd have a great time. Jeremy hands me and you a completely blank character sheet, and is like, you'll find out what you are soon. I think it's such a cool concept.
That would be really fun.
Oh, thank you. And I heartily recommend it to anyone who wants a fun time. Put all the work on the DM now, and then they have to create the character. They have to create some scratch cards.
Yeah.
The scratch cards are so much fun. So we played D&D with scratch card covered character sheets. So as you play the game, you're like, okay, now I'm going to try and lift this heavy object. Okay, well, give me a strength roll. I guess I'm going to have to scratch off my strength stat. Oh, turns out I'm not strong at all. I'm terrible at this.
That's super fun.
And then every time you want to, let's say you're in a battle and you're like, well, I guess it's time for a spell. And then it's like, okay, scratch off a spell. Let's see what you've got. And you've got conjure campfire. Yeah, thaumaturgy. Yeah. Find north or something.
So it's awesome.
Rich with
identify
comedic opportunities, but also a really fun role-playing kind of challenge, I suppose. Like, rather than role-playing a character, you're role-playing someone who has no memory, and then you're kind of piecing together that character and trying to incorporate those elements as you play.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting.
Yeah. Your example of like not realizing that you have no strength is like in action would be very funny. Like going over to a boulder, like, I got this. Just like, no, I got this. Okay, no, I don't actually.
Yeah.
I got nothing. I got precisely nothing.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, wow.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So am I right in thinking that you're going into a sort of final sort of climax with your current characters and the current and setting and everything like that? How does that feel? Like, you know, coming, bringing, you know, like you just said, that's a long-standing thing, 6 years, you know, nearly plus. That's got to be kind of wild, right? To be finally sort of even looking at the horizon, you know what I mean? Let alone kind of noticing the horizons even there. How has sort of the team felt about that? And I guess, you know, what are you most excited about for what lies beyond the horizon?
Yeah, like the final season. I tell you what, a nice way to start talking about that is how hard we thought about what we were going to call it. Because, you know, first thought was the final season. And then we were like, does that sound too final though? Or like, does that, and then we're like, no, but it has to sound final because otherwise what's the point? Yeah. You know, the idea was that, you know, we have been playing these characters for 6 years and, you know, we love them dearly, but we, you know, we want to do something new and, you know, it will be fun and exciting to create all new characters with 6 years of D&D experience behind us. You know, it'll be a world apart from how we started out 6 years ago. And it felt like giving them a kind of denouement and giving them a sort of like resolution, you know, and or a violent death or, you know, whatever's going to happen, to give them something that's more than just we're going to park them, you know, to give them something that was, you know, that kind of puts a cap on their stories.
Yeah. Like there's something the characters deserve sometimes.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. So I would never say like never to, I mean, assuming they're alive, even if they're not, perhaps. I would never say never to not using a character I love again, but it felt like it shouldn't be too easy to reach for them. So we're going to, like, you know, give them their final season. Yes. And yeah, the calling it the final season, we're like, are people going to understand that we're not just retiring Oxventure altogether? Because when we started out, we didn't think about branding. So Oxventure is the name of, like, the channel. It's the name of us as a sort of D&D tabletop collective. It's also kind of the name of our party of characters, our original party of characters. Like, formally, they're, you know, properly known as the Oxventurers Guild. But that's a mouthful. We don't say that. No one says that. So how do you – I mean, this is – it was really a very tedious technical, like, conversation about how do you communicate that we're finishing this group of characters – and we're going to do it. We're going to do some more. And of course, we went back and forth. And then eventually it was just called the final season anyway, because obviously it was. But, you know, we don't have, like, the Mighty Nine is a Critical Role story. And now it's a nut time for a new campaign. Like, we haven't set that pattern. So there was that kind of that issue to start with. But now we're happy to call it the final season. And I think Zach, our producer, has been really, like, our leading light on like communicating that with our kind of audience, like, Zach's done a great job with, you know, kind of trailers and promotion and that kind of thing, but also this very clear messaging that it's time to, like, have a hero send off for these original characters, and there's more coming after that. And that's a ways off. Like, we haven't played that yet. We haven't even, Johnny's working on the setting as we speak, but just to, like, let people know that don't worry, we're not, like, we're not quitting the whole thing. You know, that would be wild, but also we're not doing that, so don't worry. And in terms
of building up that sense of excitement about the thing that's next, right? It's like, it's like, hey, yes, of course you love this and it's amazing, but, like, think about the possibilities. You know what I mean? Like you said, like, back when we first started doing this, we were just like, let's just do D&D. It's like exactly like this. You know, these are the characters, you know, like you said, like, the characters, I don't think you ever imagined playing Prudence for this long. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of wild to then think, right, I've got to, you know, I think you probably would have thought about it differently if you'd have thought, I'm going to be playing this character for 6 years.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You might have sat down and given the character sheet another once over, or been like, you know, I'm going to wait. Okay, let me really think about this backstory or something. So, you know, I think I agree with you. Like, it's just exciting to imagine then what you guys, and I'm really particularly excited about what Johnny, you know, is going to come up with. You know, I think Johnny's an amazing DM, and what they're going to come up with for, you know, the next setting. I think it's going to be absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I can imagine it's going to be kind of, like, freeing as well for you, because obviously in terms of accessibility, you've done a really good job in making those kind of archetypal characters that people can be like, oh, okay, yeah, that's the warlock tiefling, and you've got, like, the druid who's, like, very in tune with nature. I'm just wondering if, not only speculating, that, like, maybe you'll go in just, like, a complete opposite direction with whatever new character you make, in a very Mighty Nine way, I guess, after Vox Machina. But yeah, I bet it's gonna be
this is generally one of my favorite parts of the job, Liv. Let me know if you agree with this, but, like, I love the fact that, like, as just kind of, like, genuine fans of this stuff, we get to sit on a call with someone who's in it and theorize about stuff.
Oh, yeah, for,
like,
sure, yeah.
It's great. I'm like, this is sick.
Yeah, it's like, so like, I have some notes. And then I'm just...
So I've got some thoughts about characters that you could play, Jake.
I think the only thing that's better, though, is when you're the person who's in the thing and you're listening to people theorize about your thing.
And you're like,
because then you're
maybe.
Just like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. It is very cool. So thank you for indulging me.
That's what we're here for.
Jane, I have a question.
Yes?
So one thing I don't think we've really talked about on the show, because hardly anyone has done it that I've ever spoken to, very, very few people have ever done it that I've spoken to, is what playing the same character for 6 years does to your conception of that character, your relationship to that character, whether, like... Because the part of my point of reference here is I think of TV shows. There's a term called flanderization that you may have heard of that refers to the idea that TV characters tend to become increasingly exaggerated over time and often can become boiled down to just a couple of key traits. So that, like, when
Ned
you
Flanders
see this
from The Simpsons.
Yeah, exactly. Like Ned Flanders from The Simpsons. So when you see the character at the beginning, they're this person. But then by the time you get to the end of the show, it's like a couple of things have been seized on that now completely define this character. Another example would be like Britta from Community, a completely different character by the end of season 6. I think it actually works in her case, but it's very, very different. than how she was in season one. I'm curious, what has that process been like for you? Have you experienced a kind of Flanderization of your character in terms of character voice or personality? Has it been like doing an impression where for a lot of people who do impressions, they say after enough years of doing the impression, they're not really doing the impression of the person. They're now doing an impression of their own impression because like the moment of inspiration is they move so far away from that initial inspiration. I'm just curious.
Yeah, it could be the opposite though. Is it like reverse Flanderization,
exactly,
where like where you're kind of, you had a very like basic idea in mind, now you've kind of like given that character a voice and a personality that was more than you initially thought. Yeah.
Oh my god, this is so interesting, and I think yeah, to your point, both of those things. I think Flanderization is a really interesting concept to kind of overlay on the Oxventure characters because, like you said, Liv, they are very like off the rack, like trope, archetypal characters. Mm-hmm. And I think that's both kind of deliberate and also just the sort of natural thing that happens when you make your first D&D characters. Yeah. You know, you go for something that's kind of easy and kind of easy to grasp. And like,
I made the edgy rogue, you know, my first time. It's going to happen.
Yep,
you
me
know?
Too.
Yeah.
And it served us well as players, as new players, but it also served our audience, you know, as relative newcomers to D&D in a lot of cases really well as well, because they, they're like, okay, Tiefling Warlock, who is evil? That is easy. I get it. And now let's go. But yeah, that does lead to in some cases, it has led to this like Flanderization, I suppose, where the characters are kind of heightened, you know, a kind of more extreme. I guess there's like a shorthand that you come to understand that, you know, like the audience knows that, you know, that this phrase is a shorthand for all this other stuff, or it's a reference to something that happened in a previous episode. So there's definitely like a shorthanding of like, This is what this character is like. You know, Corazon is always going to be like this, and you almost don't have to tell the joke because the audience is already there, and, you know, ahead of you. At the same time, I think when we created the characters, we thought long and hard about it, but also like you don't think about everything. So some of it like comes to you as you play. And maybe some of that is like more internalized than kind of externalized, I suppose. But I hadn't.
I do wonder as well how much the environment plays into it. Like, in the sense that, you know, with those characters on a TV show, like, you never imagine them being in such ridiculous situations. So you kind of don't know how they're going to react or how that character is going to be. You know what I mean? And, like, you're not thinking about those questions when you're coming up with this character. You're not thinking, like, oh, what happens if they fall in a volcano? How are they going to react to that scenario? Because it's like, you can't possibly be thinking about those things. So they kind of have to naturally change and evolve based on just the environment and everything that gets thrown at them over the course of the show or over the course of, you know, the game that you're playing.
Yeah. And I think that's something we had in mind. You know, obviously there's only so much more character building you're going to do coming into the final season. Like, ideally the characters are in place and now you're kind of giving them a send off. But at the same time, I think, you know, we were thinking about like, well, where has this all been leading for my character or for, you know, someone else's character? Like, if there is something they've been working towards, then how do we kind of bring that to the fore in a final season?
Yeah.
And I think probably
arc.
There was a point when we were doing a lot of streams, like sort of lockdown pandemic style streams, where we were doing a stream every other week. And that was probably the most frequently we've played D&D and made D&D content. And like, I have very fond memories of those streams, but I suspect they were the most kind of like TV like in the sense of, you know, like a TV show where you start at A and then you end and everything is back to A. You know, you tell a little story. Yeah. It's like a Simpsons episode, in fact. You know, you tell a little story and everything's back to, you know, you've had some fun and but nothing's really changed by the end of it. And I think that was the right content for the time. You know, it was like, you know, have a little game and kind of, but not moving an enormous like arc, more, an enormous story arc forward. So I guess there's been moments of Oxventure that have been more like Flanderized, and then there have been moments like this final season where we're, you know, trying to trying to think a little more subtly about character, I suppose.
Yeah. I think that's really cool, though. Just kind of like, you know these characters for this long, and then like you get to this point and you're like, well, check this out, though. What if we did this with them? And you're like, oh my God, okay. Now I'm super duper in.
I'm going to miss Prudence so much. Because over time, like, she's become more and more like an aspirational figure for me. Not because I aspire to be evil, but because I'm pleased that she turned out not to be like a kind of edgelord, grim and gritty warlock, you know, tortured angst, etc., etc. Yeah. She has so much fun, and she's so kind of the gleeful, chaotic evil. Mm. And there's that thing like where your D&D character is sort of your first D&D character anyway, sort of you. But it's also, in my case, it's sort of like an aspirational version of myself. Because I'm like, I could stand to be more, you know, kind of gleeful, more fun, you know, like finding more fun. I think that is an admirable quality. So that makes her such like an enjoyable character to play. And
I totally get what you mean.
I think going into whatever comes after the final season, and I'll be trying to, you know, steer into something else. And I'm like, am I going to enjoy playing a character, a different character, as much as a character who is just constantly having fun and, you know, albeit by trying to do the most evil thing in any situation.
It's funny, actually. I feel very, very similar about the first character I played on Three Black Halflings, which is called Muti Quoba, and he very much feels like a again, not like aspirational, but it's almost like, I'm like, man, if I could be like 10% more Muti, I feel like I'd get more shit done in my life. You know what I mean? Like, he's just like slightly less concerned about everybody's feelings. I'm like, maybe that would be nice if I could just relax and be a little more like, you know, just like, no, I'm going to do this because that's what I need to get done.
Yeah, I have a character who's just like, she exudes confidence, and like, I have social anxiety. So like, every time I play, I'm like, all right, here we go. Time to get wild with it. Yeah. But
maybe that's what we need to do, Liv. Maybe we need to, like, both of us, when we're like going out and around in our daily lives, like have an item of clothing or something that reminds us of that character. And then just like have a little bit of it. You know what I mean? Have a tiny bit.
Absolutely. I drench myself in water because she's a water ganassi. Yeah, I know it.
I feel like fans of the Caterpillar and Spunkers the Spider Queen are sitting here listening to you talk about how you need to be more like Moody. The color is draining from their faces as they remember not only what happened to Siraj, but Bekoe. They remember all...
He's fundamentally misunderstood Jeremy Cobb, and I will not... I will not stand for any of this.
As the DM who was here for all of this, I'm just sitting here like, good lord. I mean, I can see what you're saying, but this is like...
Hey, dude, I said 10%. I said 10%, okay? Back down. I said 10%.
But Jane, that does track as well for what you were saying about your Baldur's Gate 3 playthrough, where you're like, but what if I was just nice to everyone? Like, this is like a chance to be like just a little bit more chaotic, a little bit more fiery. Yeah, I could totally get that.
I love that. So obviously we've got the final season coming, which isn't the final season of Vox Venture, very important to, you know, point out, but the final season of these characters, this arc. Is there anything else on the horizon that you're like excited about, that you're working on? Is there anything you've announced that you can talk about? Obviously I don't want to, you know, I'm not expecting you to sort of give us loads of spoilers or anything like that, but just sort of generally, if there is anything that you're kind of looking forward to with Vox Venture, if there's any more, you know, anything that you're looking forward to, or are you kind of mostly just focused on getting the new campaign up and running?
Well, I checked with producer Zach before I came on, and I'm like, can I talk about working with Liv and Jasper? And he said, yeah. So I'm going to say that I'm very excited about collaborating with you two. Sorry, Jeremy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm super excited. I guess everyone keep an eye out for Two Black Halflings on Ox Venture. It's gonna be really exciting.
I'm gonna be releasing my own series called Nox Venture.
Nice, perfect.
Oh, that's
just wait for that cease and desist. It'll be there.
It'll be in the mail.
Don't you worry. It'll be in the mail. Well, Jane, this has been absolutely delightful. Thank you so much for giving us the time and talking to us today. It's been a long time coming, and very, very excited for what is next for Ox Venture. Very, very excited to get to do a little something coming up soon. Very excited about that and not even a little bit nervous. And yeah, I think now is a perfect time to ask for a tale from the table. Okay. So this is a story. This is something, it doesn't have to be, you know, sort of anything grand. It can be something that's funny. It can be something that was scary. It can be something that was really heartfelt, something really emotional. It can be from Mark's Venture. It can be from a home game. It can be whatever you want. Just something that feels memorable to you that happened whilst you were playing a TTRPG.
Okay. Gosh, you said at the beginning that, you know, I'd have to choose one of these. And I've been thinking the whole time. And because it's the one in mind right now, I'm going to say, during that period where we were streaming Oxventure, like in the sort of like lockdown pandemic period, we were streaming fortnightly on a Friday night. And it was such a different vibe because we'd never streamed D&D before. And it was... it was kind of the most we were seeing each other, you know, that, at that point in time. Obviously, we weren't seeing each other in person. And there's a particular session, and I just checked the title, and it is, in fact, called Sect Appeal.
Yeah, shout out to the puns that your episode titles are. Like, very, very good.
Can I just say yuck? I don't know why that made me feel uncomfortable, and I don't know why.
It should make you feel uncomfortable. That's the correct response. Yes, like sidebar that we spend way too much time like workshopping puns for you know, the thing where like puns only really impress the writer themselves and maybe other writers and no one else cares. We spend far too much time thinking about like pun titles. But
very good.
If you go and watch that stream, there's a particular kind of like frequency of like manic energy, and I think it was I feel like it must have lined up with a particularly like dense, heinous bit of like lockdown. And we're role-playing initially. We're in a tavern and we're role-playing that we've had like a very heavy, you know, kind of day, night, afternoon of drinking. And like, we may each have had drinks, you know, in our like little desk setup, Zoom window type things. But I don't think anyone was actually, you know, intoxicated. Yeah. But just something about role-playing drunk is very freeing, is very enjoyable. And
it almost makes you drunk sometimes.
Yes, yeah, it's exactly. Weird. It's like the cheaper, healthier version.
Yeah.
And I, you know, that there are occasionally moments where you're role-playing and it really clicks and you're like, I'm having such a lovely time doing this. And I felt that in that session. And I think it was partly to do with setting the scene, like laying the table as being like, you're starting this from a place of being like a little bit like two drink merry kind of thing. It was such, as an experience, it made me feel so much lighter in like a really, really kind of heavy time. It was, it's almost a cliche, like escapism, obviously, you know, but it was such a weird way to find escapism while streaming to like 1,000 people or however many people, and it's such a nice memory, and it just exists there in a little, you know, in a little stream on the internet.
That's so nice.
It was a fun episode. Like I say, by the end of it, back to square one. You know, it's very much a kind of start and end in the same place.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think it was what we needed at the time. It's a fun episode.
I bet it meant a lot to the audience as well, who were also stuck at home, kind of like, you know, living vicariously through you a little bit and just like having a little bit of a freeing, fun time.
I hope so.
I small tangent on the feeling drunk when not actually being drunk. I have a very strange. I've been recording a children's animation. I've been playing the lead, so I've been doing 52 episodes of children's animation.
Oh, damn.
And recording like 80 plus lines, and in every single episode my character has to like laugh quite hysterically. Like, normally the end of the episode involves my character like
oh, is it like everyone, you know, laughing together?
Yeah, it's like the, you know, the episode's wrapped up and everyone's happy and everything like that. I can't tell you, it took me like 36 episodes to not break down in like actually laughing after doing it. Like, it's so hard to like genuinely start laughing and then stop. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, and then just go back to like, because there was no joke. There was nothing funny at all. Yeah. And the amount of times where I'm then we're trying to pick up the next episode and I'm still just giggling. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, like pull it together. But it's like, because like we'd have to do like five or six takes. Like, yeah, just keep going. Just keep going. Just keep laughing. You know what I mean?
And yeah. I think like, they would put you put the giggling at the end, make the cackle right. the last thing you do.
But we'd think, but then we have to pick up like another episode. We'd do like two in a row or whatever. And the beginning of the next episode is just me laughing through half of my takes.
It's a really
and the director getting
scene
really annoyed. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but that was, it's just, it's fun to laugh, man.
Oh, that's so cute. Yeah, I love the idea of seasoned voice actors laughing hysterically for like 5 minutes. And then they're like, all right, that's a good take. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And stopping and just straight up stopping. Yeah, no, I'm not that seasoned yet. I definitely can't, I can't shut off the, I can shut off everything else. Like I could cry hysterically for 5 minutes and then go back to normal. But laughter for me is, it's a whole different ballgame.
That's really interesting. I mean, like with crying though, do you find, because I would assume that crying, like laughing, there's some sort of like neurochemical thing going on where like, if you just laugh for long enough, you've got the same kind of like buzzy, like hormones or whatever going on as laughing, but you don't find that with crying that you're like,
I think I still get the same kind of, I feel like I get like that slightly kind of glazed, almost like adrenaline rush that you get a little bit after you've like really heavily cried or experienced an emotion where you feel a little bit just like, whew, you know, but like that's easier to kind of push through and like be normal, you know, like on a set.
I always feel silly afterwards when I like,
that's what I mean.
I feel like embarrassed. Like, okay, well, I didn't mean that. And I'm sorry. Like,
oh no. So mine's the opposite. I feel silly and embarrassed after I've laughed hysterically.
Okay.
Cause then I'm just like, I'm in a silly mood. Yeah. Like in my headspace now, I'm thinking the stupidest things and I need to be normal and that's difficult. So I definitely find turning off crying is way easier than turning off laughing for whatever reason. But Jane, Douglas, this has been what a delight to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on. I'm so excited to for everything that's coming on Accenture. I'm so excited to be on it. I'm so excited to see if one day maybe Jeremy can get his ass up to the UK and just be there for it. I don't know. Maybe he can.
But he's so far away.
He's so far away. So we'll have to see.
We get, like, we set up a website and it's called whereisjeremy.com. And then, like, people can see
tracker.
Where, if you they track you.
Yes. Yeah, but you know, I would hack this and put him on Antarctica.
No. Jasper, we need this.
We need this. He's just so elusive. The thing is, we've been trying to message him and get him on stuff. Crit Roll's been chasing Jeremy down for years.
They just can't find Jeremy.
Yeah. They just can't
they
find
keep messaging him. Jasper, and then they think that I'm in the UK.
yeah, the funny thing was, guys, and this is the last thing we'll end on this, is that actually originally D20 reached out to Jeremy, but they just emailed me by accident.
They all think your name is Jeremy.
They all think my name's Jeremy, and I just ran with
Wait,
it.
Wait, are you joking?
So, yes, 100%.
Well,
that would be nuts if D20 went that far to confusing
Sorry.
Us.
Sorry, everyone.
That would be tough.
Everyone does tough. Confuse Jasper and Jeremy. All
but everyone
the time.
Does.
It is a running
wild.
Joke that happens.
Okay.
A lot.
Yeah.
But like beyond a running joke to the point where people we've both met before will frequently come up to me and be like, "Hey, Jeremy, how are you doing?" And I'm like,
"Other one."
And they're like, "Oh, sorry." And it's like, "Oh my, how?"
People who listen
how?
To the show will like.
Because apparently we sound similar.
Yeah.
Which is what?
No, I think we did have a new all-time worst one recently, which was when you were at that con last year.
Some folks are...
Now, this
Red
is how
it's... Now, my nose.
I don't want to bash these people. I've never met
people.
These people.
Lovely folks.
But
they're really nice.
Jasper, I believe, did a panel with some people in the UK while I was actually in the US. He did a
multiple
panel with
panels,
them and then
actually.
Visited them
multiple
at
panels.
Their booth at the con. They took a photo of him and then tagged me in the photo.
Oh, no.
Jane's face.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh. And by the way, my name on Instagram is not Jeremy. They had to type in the Cobmeister.
The Cobmeister.
So
the Cobmeister.
They not only hosted a panel with Jasper and spoke to him in person, but then they had to type in my last name.
I spoke to him. I spoke to the guy.
Yeah, they think Jasper really loves calling him the Cob.
Yeah.
Took a picture.
Cobwright.
And
they were very apologetic afterwards, and it was very, and then there was a follow-up.
Yes.
I was gonna say the funniest part of this is the fact that the guy who tagged me in it, his partner is mixed race. Mm-hmm. She then posted a picture of herself online and tagged herself as Liv.
Yeah.
The funniest thing that's ever happened.
That was straight up.
Trolling her own partner to the nth degree. Absolutely illegal.
Yeah. Took it to a whole new level. That was hysterical.
Love that. Love that. Well, Jane, thank you so much for coming on. The floor is yours. Is there anything that you want to shout out, talk about, whatever it is? It could obviously just be Oxventure, but just if there's anything that in particular you want to plug, your own socials, all that kind of stuff, the floor is yours.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I just wanted to say what a treat to talk about, you know, D&D stuff with you folks for an hour. So thank you for having me. If people would like to see some Oxventure, go to youtube.com/Oxventure. That's where all the good stuff's happening. I think when this podcast episode goes out, we will be just starting or have just started the final season. So there has never been a better time to get involved as we start the final season.
There's a final season. You've got plenty of time to catch up. Go right now.
If you go right now, there will be time. Yeah.
Yeah, you've got
and
time.
Check out the D&D butts as well. Check out those butts. I'm sorry.
Check out the butts.
Check out D&D butts.
The D&D butts. You got to check out our D&D butts. Yeah.
Check out those D&D butts. Yeah.
A treat.
Absolutely amazing. Jeremy Cobb, where can people find you?
In England,
either
right
the
now.
US or the UK.
On the internet.
I'm imagining, you know, like the Santa anything. Tracker.
Just staring,
you know,
at Christmas.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
The Santa.
Yes, we need a magical Santa
right
tracker.
Now.
Yeah. Oh, where's exactly Jeremy? It's just a little picture of Jeremy's head.
Yes.
We're going all across the world and we're like, oh,
whoa, where is he going?
Whoa. Jeremy, yes.
You can find me on
can we, though?
Twitter at Jeremy Cobb 1. It's Cobb with two B's, the number one. You can find me on Instagram at the Cobb Meister. You can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/casualquestlive, where I, who am not a gamer, play various classic games for the first time. I recently played Sonic Adventure. I'd played Sonic Adventure 2, specifically Sonic Adventure 2 Battle, but I'd never played Sonic Adventure. Been doing Chrono Trigger. We're going to be doing Metal Gear Solid 2, because I already did Metal Gear Solid 1 on stream. So got a bunch of, a slew of classic games. I think we're going to be doing Deus Ex Mankind Divided. We've got several Halo games, a bunch of whole mess of games. If there's a classic game, there's a good chance we will have played it.
Awesome. Hell yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much it for me. Sick. Don't see me on Oxventure, I guess. That's where you
maybe.
At this point, Jane, don't.
Yeah,
don't.
Exactly. We'll be disappointed if you do at this point.
Yeah. You should announce, legit though, you should announce pressure? Me being on the show and then have it just be Jasper and Liv again.
Oh, and then
that would
yeah.
actually be very funny.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited about that.
Do you want me to go?
Liv.
Hiya.
Liv, everyone knows where they can find you because you're easily accessible, but please tell them anyway.
Hi, I'm down in Brighton. That's not a dox. No, you know I'm in Brighton.
Here's my postcode.
God, no. You can find me on like social things. I'm at Does Dark Magic or at Olivia Does Dark Magic. If I'm not at Does Dark Magic, you'll find me with that. You should check us out on all the socials as well. We have a TikTok and stuff. I was going to plug the live show, but it will be done by the time this is out. So
yeah, we'll have done it. We'll have 100% done it.
It's so soon now.
It's so soon.
Yeah.
Live show.
Soon.
Are you excited? I mean, excited. Obviously you're excited. It's going to be
very excited.
Yeah. It should be
It's going to be
fun.
Lovely.
Yeah,
it's going to
yeah.
be very, very lovely. I'm Heck very yeah. excited. And you can find me at JW_Cartwright on all of my social medias. You can check out, I've got another show which I DM for called Rotating Heroes. I'm going to be on Oxventure. Sorry, Jeremy. And I love Jeremy so dearly. And I,
Jeremy's going to leave the show. Jeremy's leaving. It's going to be too black off. Jeremy's like, I'm out. I'm done.
I'm leaving the call.
No!
He's gone. He's gone.
And you can follow us.
Oh, he actually
left the call.
Bloody
no.
did it.
You little shit.
You can follow us at 3. That's the number 3, Black Halflings. And don't forget to check out all of our links in the description below, like our Patreon. We've got merch. Maybe we have other live shows. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Loads of different things.
Well, look who came crawling back. Sorry, hi.
All I know is that Jeremy is no longer a part of those things. So, absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. That's everything for this week. We will talk to you next week. So long.
Wait. Did we ask Jane? Oh, wait. We did ask Jane.
Where yeah, you. Wait. Maybe you missed it because you dipped off the call for a bit. So.
That is. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So I'm gonna end this if that's okay with you.
You know what? For your own good, don't have me on Oxide.
You already said.
It's just not worth it. You don't know how much editing we have to do.
So long, shy of folk.
So long, my word.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.